Welcome to Middle School Matters Podcast number 581, Slinging the Slang, Making Us Thirsty. We've got, we're going to sling some slang and we're going to make it thirsty. And we've got a bunch of resources for you this week. So without further ado, here's the wonderful, the magnanimous, the Mr. Troy Patterson.
All right, welcome back to the show. I am Troy Patterson, and with me is the world's greatest co-show host, Mr. Sean McGurr. Hey, Sean.
Well, hello there.
You had a nice four-day week this week.
I did. And you know what? Next week is a three-day week, but it's really only 2 days. So,
okay.
Yeah. The month of April has been a really nice month for me.
So you seem like you're doing well with math now, though. It's a three-day week, but it's a two-day. Oh.
Yes. So we're covering the section in my math class called variables, and next week is a variable week.
There you go. I have next week off, so I have some work that I have planned to do, but I also have stuff around the house that I'll be doing as well. So I have learned that Maine traditionally gets the third week of April off. You know, growing up, we always had spring break around Easter. So we'd have, like, Good Friday off and the week following Easter. That was pretty traditional when I was a youngin'. It's a little different now. So, and in good ways. I mean, you guys have, the Eid is coming up, correct?
Yes, Eid is this week. Should be Wednesday or Thursday night.
Okay.
Depends on when they sight the moon in Mecca.
Right. I was going to say, and you have a large enough population where you understand it can be two different days?
Yep.
Yep. So
we give them three just to cover everything.
Just to make sure. So yep. That you're covering the correct days. Which means,
yep. I get Eid off too, and yeah. Shucks, I just might throw my own iftar dinner just for myself.
There you go. Oh, hey, you know, I got a new job, doing some marketing for a cereal company.
You did?
I did. I'm going to be Raisin Bran Awareness.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. I gotcha. Yep. Pucker up.
Hey, if a Starbucks mug were to commit a crime, what crime would it commit? Oh.
If a Starbucks mug were to commit a crime, I don't know. Something about latte or something, maybe. I don't know what.
Be grande larceny.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. A group of ophthalmologists recently opened a clinic to treat some of the more painful ocular diseases.
Oh?
Yeah. It's a sight for sore eyes.
I see what you did there.
See what I did there?
I saw what you did there, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I dreamed I was a muffler last night.
You did?
I did. Woke up exhausted.
Ah, sure. Mm-hmm.
Should have tied this one with the earlier one. There was a barista who gave his heart and soul to the coffee shop.
Aw.
Yeah, he got a latte in return.
Oh. Oh, very nice.
Yeah. And finally, did you know I was named after my dad?
I did not know that.
So were you.
That's true.
It's impossible to be named before him. All right. Well, with that one, I think we're going to head up to the clouds. We're calling on Dave to save this one for me. And this is interesting. This has got, I mean, Dave always does such a great job. This one has some activities kids can participate in. It has some tips that they can become citizen scientists and help with the collection of knowledge and data. And it is also includes pareidolia. So, you know, there's that. And here, without further ado, is the wonderful Mr. Dave Bidlowski in the Middle School Science Minute.
Hi, this is Dave Bidlowski of K12Science.net, and this is your K-12 Science Podcast. I was recently reading the March-April 2023 issue of ScienceScope, a publication for middle school science teachers from the National Science Teaching Association. And I read the section Scope on the Skies, written by Bob Riddle. And he wrote an article entitled Castles in the Sky. And he said that most, if not all of us, have a condition known as pareidolia. Serious? No. But pareidolia is a rather imaginative thing. The word comes from two Greek words meaning wrong image. It is a human condition that has us seeing familiar patterns or images as we look around us. Think of the man in the moon as an example of pareidolia. And for most of us, regardless of our age, when looking at clouds, especially the large and puffy cumulus clouds, we often see shapes resembling dogs, castles, faces, even a winged flying horse. Which made me think, how can students become more involved in studying clouds? And he suggested a program that I'm involved in the GLOBE program, and in particular becoming a citizen scientist in the GLOBE Observer program for looking at cloud cover and patterns in our atmosphere. And students can learn more by visiting the GLOBE Observer site at observer.globe.gov. With a cell phone app from the GLOBE Observer website, students can participate in the GLOBE Observer Clouds program. Participants observe their local cover cloud and surface conditions. These observations are coordinated with two of NASA's Earth-observing satellites, Terra and Aqua, as each satellite flies over the observer's location. Terra, usually during the morning between 10 a.m. and 12 p.m., while the Aqua overpasses are usually between 1 and 3 p.m. Students may check for overpass times at the GLOBE website. Students will collect data to be used with the clouds and the Earth's Radiant Energy System, CIRRUS, instrument, and the Moderate Resolution Imaging Spectral Radiometer, MODIS, on board the two satellites. As I mentioned, GLOBE Observer and the Clouds app is an app-based tool that will help you document what you see in the sky. Once you've downloaded the app and created an account, the Clouds tool, including the Clouds Wizard if you want to use it, will guide you through the observation process. Required data includes providing your location, reporting on overall cloud cover, and surface conditions that can impact satellite observations. Optional but very useful data include cloud types, cloud opacity, sky conditions, and visibility, then taking photos of what you see in the sky. Even a basic observation without optional elements is valuable. For more details about how to take observations, including tips and tricks, additional tutorials beyond what is in the app, and frequently asked questions about how to observe, visit the GLOBE Observer website at observer.globe.gov. And this has been your K-12 Science Podcast.
All right, so you're got your looking into the clouds and when you should look into clouds and the whole conditions, and it's great stuff. So, hey, we were talking in pre-show, and I mentioned a resource, which I am going to mention later, which is a downloadable book. Right?
Which one? Oh, I see. Okay.
It's just a downloadable book. I'm going to mention it a little bit later. I can just mention it now. So there is a...
It's okay. You don't
have... There's a book called Make Something Wonderful. It is a compilation of Steve Jobs' speeches, interviews, and emails And it offers a window into how he thought. And you can download it as a free book from in Apple Books. It is also a website, so you can go to the website if you don't have an Apple device. So if you are on another device or you don't want to use Apple Books, you can go to the website and you can read it there as well. So we were talking about that a little bit this morning. I have installed it into Apple Books, but I've not really started reading it yet. And then you said that you were reading something in Apple Books, the Robert E. Lee book, and you said that
yes,
it helped you finish it faster. And I thought
yes,
that was interesting. I thought that was an interesting comment because I read books electronically and in print. And I honestly, my default is I prefer the physical book in most cases. So I wondered why it is you said you were able to finish it faster because you were reading it in Apple Books.
Oh, I switched the lettering to a paper gray scale.
Okay.
And then used the black background. And it made the flow go better.
Okay. And that was part of that discussion was I was, because they brought the curl back.
Oh, yeah.
And I like the curl. It's a little thing, but I like it.
Enabled it.
So I thought that was interesting, and I think that's going to be an interesting thing to keep an eye on going forward. Are kids going to read more electronically, or are they going to read? Are they still going to prefer? Are they still going to utilize physical paper books? And what is the difference of them? Because we know that by research right now, we know that the latest research says that there is a difference. If you're reading long form, you're better off reading. More effective reading is done on physical books. And I don't know if that's going to change or not, but that's the latest research that I've read, is that if you're doing something that is long form, it's more effective. More sticky if you read it in physical books. So, do you read both, or have you standardized on electronic books?
I live in a small house and currently lack the physical space for additional paper books. So I primarily do electronic books, ebooks on my. So Troy makes fun of me because I have a big tablet, and I like my big tablet because it fits more words on a page at a time. I can also split screen it, and I can do my book on one side and I can take notes on the other side, kind of like two Apple mini iPads right on one iPad.
Right. I
like it. That's just me. Matter of fact, I went out and I committed a heresy. I bought a Samsung Super Tablet, and I like it. I hate the Android operating system on it, but I like the physical size, and I like the ability to read larger things of text on it. So one of the things that bothers me is, it doesn't bother me to turn a page, right? What bothers me is that I have to constantly flick my finger to get to the next, because I can read. It's actually turning into physical exercise. My arm muscles are toner on one side than the other, because it's got practice working the muscles flicking the screen to scroll down through the text. Robert E. Lee was a 670 page book, and so there's a lot of flip, 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 flip. Now it gave it to me all in one big scroll, which is fine, but I still had to flip, 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 because I can read fast enough where I'm, you know, and that's, It's tiring. It wasn't my eyes that got tired. It was my scrolling hand that got tired. So, but I like that. But I can also carry. So, for example, there's an English teacher that you and I both know, and she mocks me for reading on a tablet because I get a lot of, I just realized I get a lot of hate for doing stuff on a tablet. Anyway, or about my tablets, not for doing stuff on it, for about my tablets. Right. So she mocks me because, you know, she has a book and she can read it when, you know, everybody else has to turn off their devices, like on the plane or whatever. She can keep reading her book. And I keep telling her that's true. However, you're carrying one book. I've got, you know, 300 in my little device here. And if I want to, I can switch anytime I want. And, you know, there's upsides and downsides to both, right? I mean, she can nail me on a whole bunch of things. I like it. I mean, I like having my books all in one little tablet and I can go, I can read. I don't like the fact that I can't just flip to a page, keep it there, and then manipulate it to do some things. It's weird. I can't really define it or explain it. It's not like when I was studying in college, right? Because we didn't have stuff like that in college. Chuck's, mm-hmm. when I was in college, I had an Apple IIc. That's what I did my papers on. That's just the way I trained myself to read and process information. I will say something interesting. You mentioned that, you know, reading long form or whatever. So I have all these physical books, right? But you know where I find myself doing a lot of my reading is sitting right here in front of the computer, looking at research articles or
mm-hmm.
other things, and right here on the screen. And if you look at it, if you think about it, this monitor is actually a 28-inch iPad. I can't touch it, move things, but it's a 28-inch iPad with the browser being the iBooks thing. I mean, right. And I scroll, right? And I scroll through reading stuff. So I think I'm actually training myself to be more in the mode of reading off of my iPad than reading a physical book. It used to be that I would carry a book everywhere I went. Well, I still do. I carry my iPad everywhere I go. Right. So we'll see. I'm going to go on a DC trip with the kids. I'm stunned we can actually pull this off. So we're going to be able to do a DC trip this year. And I'm going to take my iPad. And I'm going to, because I got 10 hours in a bus. And what you going to do, right? So I'm going to take a nap because we're leaving at ungodly hour in the morning. And then I'm going to read. I'm going to catch up on some of the stuff that I've been wanting to catch up on. I've got The Madness of Crowds by Douglas Murray that I want to read. There's a book called Fire, and I forget who wrote it. But it's about how do we teach kids to civics, basically. You know, what's the importance of civics and why our kids need civics skills, especially going forward in the country we have today. What else is there? There's a bunch. So we'll see. I want to do more books by Dr. Alan Gulzo. That one by Robert E. Lee was phenomenal, and he's got one on Lincoln that I want to look at. So that's also on my future purchase list. But
mm-hmm.
I like the tablet. I do. I really do. But if the part that wears me out is not the fatigue, but from eye fatigue from reading, but the physical. So if I could figure out a way to fix that.
So on most, I think on Apple Books, you can just tap the screen and you can set it so you just tap the screen and it turns the page.
Yeah, I'll have to play with the settings again. I haven't converted mine back to the page flip yet. Mine is still in scroll mode.
So okay.
I didn't do it largely because if I would have done it, it would actually repaginated the where I was at in the book. And I had to go find my place again.
Well,
so it's a temporary thing. I just did it until I finished the book.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Okay. Because I was just interested because I read a lot of articles and I read a lot of articles. I tend to read the articles either on my computer or on my iPad. But when it comes to books, I tend to read physical books. And I have a little stack next to the on the night table, on the nightstand there. So, so yeah. The other thing that we've talked about is, especially following COVID, there's been a real strong SEL movement in education. And then, of course, there's been the backlash to the SEL movement. And I think it's interesting, in Maine, there's been a lot of attention to SEL, social-emotional learning. And, of course, part of the middle school fundamentals kind of falls under SEL, because it does, part of middle school is kids learning about themselves and starting to take some agency as to their responsibilities and you know, kind of taking care of themselves. But I think we have kind of different experiences. The several of the people that I'm talking to are very aware in implementing a lot of SEL activities. And I think there's less of that going on for you. I don't think you're doing a lot. Your school as a whole isn't doing a lot with SEL.
We did last year. This year, not so much. Largely, we've had a couple transitions, right? Our school counselor retired. She was the one who was heading up a lot of this stuff. But we've had bigger fish to fry.
Mm-hmm.
We are. I just looked at the board agenda for Monday, and we have three more students which are being expelled. Understand, we don't expel unless the law requires it. So these three are up for. Yeah. So this is not a you know, yeah, but they're good kid. No. Mm-hmm. So we've been fighting that this year.
And part of this is, I don't want this to...
We haven't done a lot of that.
And I don't want this to sound like a criticism that, like, you're not doing anything with SEL. Because I don't think that's not my perspective. I think that you have to know your kids. You have to know your community. You have to know your learners. And whenever you get to, you know, SEL is sometimes called the touchy-feely stuff. And...
Right.
Sometimes a lot of the training for how to do SEL correctly may not have been fully implemented with teachers. So there's a lot of teachers that may not know how to do SEL, which can then lead to more problems as well. So, but I just want to make sure that it's not like I'm saying it's a criticism, because, you know,
no, there just is. Well, we've also changed from central offices, changed the direction too, from SEL activities to computer directed learning activities. iReady. Let's just call it iReady. That's what it is. And so the time we would have done for stuff like that, we now spend it on a computer training our kids stuff. So, you know, we've made that choice. It comes down from central office. I think we're seeing the effects. So it's a pendulum. I look at it as a pendulum. Then we've pushed one direction so far, it's starting to swing back the other way. And I think one of the things by pushing us so far one direction is that we've taught the kids that the lack of the need for grit. I keep thinking about what Dr. Debbie Silver wrote in Fall Down 7 Times Get Up 8, is teaching kids how to be self-resilient, right? It started as a shtick, and now it's turning into a learning thing. So my school requires, if you want to use the bathroom or hallway for a drink of water, you have to fill out a Google form before you can fill out the classroom pass and then use the bathroom. Okay?
Okay. So they're doing a Google form and a form in the classroom?
Yes. Yes, because you have to have a physical pass to go into the hallway. Plus, you must now also fill out this form. Okay, so it's Google Form. So they're tracking the number of people who use the bathroom like every hour or six times an hour, or they're tracking frequency. Okay?
Right.
All right. And then I have to tap the screen to after they fill out the form to say I've seen the form and they filled it out truthfully. Not just like didn't put in their neighbor's name instead of putting in their name, so their neighbor gets credit for going to the bathroom and not them. Right?
Okay, how do they make sure you do it versus they do it?
How do they make sure?
Yeah, that, like, how do, because, like, you have to tap it. So where's the control in you tapping it? Okay. So they have to bring it to you and say, here it is, before they get a physical pass.
Yep.
Okay.
Tap this and they'll go fill out the pass. Yes.
Got it.
So I turned this into a game because it could be tedious. So I'll say, all right, fill out the form and tap my finger. So the first time they did it, they would come up and they'd take their finger and they'd tap my finger and they'd look at me like, you're an idiot. Why am I tapping your finger? And I was like, no, tap my finger, which I meant was with the computer, not with your hand. And they're like, oh, I get it. Okay. And so they'd rig it and I'd hold my finger out and they'd tap the finger with the computer. And so it turns it into a shtick and turns it into a thing instead of being. So anyways, kids like that stuff, right?
Right.
Well, so I took it to the next level, right? So I'd say, all right, tap my finger. But then I would hold my arm up as high as I could go and put my finger up there. So they had to figure out how to tap my finger.
Got it.
Right. They'd start problem solving, or I'd put it way down by the ground, or I'd curl my finger, or I'd just do crazy stuff like that. What I found was interesting was their very first initial response, before they'd even tried anything, they would look at me and they'd say, I can't do that. And it's like, no, you can do this. I can't do that.
Right.
Yeah, you can't just reach up there and do it. No, I can't do it. So we finally got them to start thinking about different ways they could problem solve and solve it. And when they got done, I looked at them and I said, no, don't tell me you can't do something. You just got to think it through. But we've trained the kids, especially with some of the SEL stuff that we've done, and this is on me. We've trained them to just, I can't do it. So I quit. I won't go. I won't do it. I won't. Right. You got to do it for me. No, there are things you can do for yourself. You have to start trying though. And I think that's one of the things we've killed is that initial make the first attempt.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's just an observation. You know, your mileage will vary because your kids are different than mine. But that's, I think, something. And so I've had conversations with folks about this and I've said, what are we doing? I'm not getting anywhere with those conversations, but I'm having conversations. So that's my observation.
Okay. The great
rat hole number two. Was that rat hole number two?
I don't know how many it is. The great social debate of how do you help kids grow into fully functioning adults. Part of this is make sure they take social studies. I'm just going to say, man, kids need social studies. All right. Well, one of the other things they might need is the social web.
The social web. I know where I can get one of those. Yeah. So in the social web, I put this one in there just for you.
I see that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody else. So Marvin Olasky is an author, editor, former editor of World Magazine, wrote, if you're a teacher, I hope you are pro chess, since it's a great help in building strong minds. Please check out this gift Washington Post article at no cost to you. Read here. And apparently, according to the Washington Post, chess is taking American schools by storm.
It is taking our school. I know it is taking our schools by storm.
And it's raining like crazy in your district, apparently. So
yes.
We have a chess club. We started a chess club this year in my district, and I was surprised how many kids showed up. So there you go. There's the phenomenon right there. AJ Giuliani was referencing a tweet, and he says, must read thread, y'all. So Ana Lorena Fabrega, and I'm glad I asked you how to say this beforehand in the pre-show. Because if it's wrong, I'm blaming Troy.
Yeah.
We're dealing with a generation of kids who are sensitive and risk-averse. Obviously, I didn't ask Troy. Kids who seek adults to solve their problems and protect them from discomfort. We must stop this. Kids are not as fragile as we think. So I think there's the there's something that's coming back from the other direction now. Let's see where that goes. Donnie Piercy. My new favorite game is Guess the AI Prompt, which I think can actually turn into a fun language arts activity, right?
Absolutely.
So he puts an AI prompt up and says, all right, what do you think they wrote to get this picture? And of course, it'd be fun to throw them in some AI generators and see how close people are.
I was going to say, I might steal this one and see what we can get. Because I am going to be doing another round of AI art, I think. So
fun. Susie Dent. I know you were itching for a Susie Dent at the very beginning of this section of the show, but here she is. I didn't leave her out. All right. Susie Dent at Susie_Dent. If you're in the need of a smile, I offer you the Finnish word, Kaiserkaiani. I had to practice that one.
I'm glad you didn't ask me about that one.
Drinking at home alone and in your underwear.
That's very specific.
You know, those of you headed on spring break. Yeah, exactly. There you go. You could rename spring break to Kaiserkaiani, and people will. I'm just doing some Kaiserkaiani. Oh, okay. It's a Finnish word. I think you'll like it. Drop that one at work this week or next week. Matt Miller, AI for Educators. He's changed his handle. It's at Matt Miller or J. Matt Miller. Have you seen TeachFlix? A free resource with more than 500 classroom videos vetted by educators. Find what you need with a search bar, age level categories, content area categories, with activities worksheets for any video. Check it out. And then there's a link at teachflix.org. So there's some resources for you, some things in the social media verse there, and we'll look for some more. It might not be as many this week with people going on spring breaks and stuff. So we'll see what happens. Maybe we'll start seeing teachers posting their I'm not doing work this week stuff, and we'll see if we get some ideas that way. But anyways, see if we can pull some other strategies out of the social media. Speaking of strategies,
Dr. Wes Fryer has shared a really neat lesson with the Fruit Loop conspiracy theories. And the idea here is students will develop a better understanding of conspiracies, conspiracy theories, and how to avoid being tricked by, quote, Fruit Loop conspiracy theories, end quote. This is really neat because he's got this written up and how he shares it. He's got the overview, the goals, the preparation. There are things that are linked that are CC licensed. He's got the procedures. It's got some, and it's some really neat stuff. It's day one, day two. It's got YouTube videos that are linked. They do some sketchnoting. There's just a whole bunch of, there's planning documents. There's all kinds of things for the kids to create. And he has shared all of it with the world. And made it available so you can get everything right there in terms of resources, in terms of templates. So there's some templates that the kids can use as they start working through that as well. And then I think you have a related video resource that kind of goes along with that.
Yeah, we talked about this quite a while ago, but one of the cool things that you could add into this is a video resource from France 24 called Truth or Fake. And it's a really short segment, doesn't take long, but they go through and they'll say, all right, so this is what you're seeing in the news, or this is what you might be seeing in social media, or this is what may be running around the water cooler. Mm-hmm. Well, here's the image, or here's the thing, and now here's the truth behind it. And they break it down and they'll say, so this is where it really came from, or this is truth, and this is really what happened. But they show the process on how they figured out whether it was true or false. And cool. That's the key thing in this video resource, which can help kids then develop skills to determine, you know, Fruit Loop or not Fruit Loop.
Yeah, I really, really like the stuff that Wes Fryer's posted, because he's got the templates there. It's very easy to follow and understand. I think it's a great example of teachers sharing their work, their important work, so that you can build off of it for yourself and, you know, kind of make the adjustments that you need to make. But there's lots of really good stuff there. So, and I have to check out the Truth or Fake, because I like those kinds of things. So, another thing that you might want to check out is called Propello. And this is one of those things that I'm hoping Dave Bidlowski will take a look at. I will tell you that it is free. I don't know if it's going to be free forever. I couldn't really find that information, but it is all geared towards science in 6th grade through 8th grade. So they have three big buckets. They have Earth and Space Science. They have Life Science and Physical Science. And then you can create learning paths with this. You can follow through what they've done, or you can create what they call learning paths, which allow you to focus the student's journey on custom learning path, build a curated set of learning materials and a range of skills, skill levels for a personalized teaching experience. So, like I said, right now it's free. They do some really neat things. It looks like they use H5P to create some questions and answer kind of materials. They've got things broken down by chapter, where you can easily add something to a learning path. And they're very clearly labeled. And they also have, by the way, an immersive reader for the kids, which will read the text to the kid. Slightly robotic voice, but not horrible by any chance, by any stretch of the imagination. And so a lot of kids may like that.
Have you had a chance to play with the Google integration feature, Google Classroom integration? I'm wondering how they integrate H5P with Google Classroom.
I have not. They do say that they have, that you get that part for free, that there is a Google integration. I don't know if it is more like a link to, because I think most of their stuff is kind of housed. So I think the Google Classroom integration is more of a, here's a link, click and go to it, because that's what tends to be the case with Google Classroom, because that's the way Google Classroom works. It's very limited into what it can do. So they do also have some free books that you can get, including ChatGPT in the Classroom, Friend, Foe, or Frenemy. So it's a free ChatGPT Getting Started Guide for Teachers and School Administrators, including 20 free ChatGPT prompts, screenshots, and more. They do have that, and then they have a little write up on the immersive reader, which is really neat. And you can get more information about that, and you can adjust what it looks like and things like that. So you can, especially if you have students with specific needs, then this could be very, very helpful. It could be helpful, for example, for EL kids. It could be helpful with kids reading who have visual acuities. You got a wide variety of kids that it can help with. So I think it's very interesting. It is grounded in the NGSS. And they do, I think, also have some state-aligned materials. For example, in Michigan, as Propello was designed for the Next Generation Science Standards, NGSS, it meets 100%. As of May 1st, 2023, of the Michigan Science Standards set forth for grades 6 through 8 by the Michigan Department of Education.
Wow.
For Maine as well. Although, I think they have a typo in here because they have the heading as Maine. And they have, underneath the heading of Maine, they have by the Maryland State Department of Education. So, yeah, proofreading, folks, proofreading. And on their little state dropdown, they have neither. They do have Maine listed. Copy paste. Something, I don't know. Not all the states are listed, apparently.
I also noticed that the links at the bottom, the boxes at the bottom where you can go to the specific curricula, the science, the language arts, and the Propello, something else. If you click them, they won't take you there. You have to use the links that are up higher on the page. That's also so in case you're wanting to discover or investigate it some more, use the stuff at the top of the page.
Yeah, and it does... like I said, I created a free account, and the free account kind of goes to a different site, and there's a lot of information there. And I think it's always best. No, nothing's going to be perfect, so, you know, give them feedback if you notice things as well. So we'll see. Like I said, there's no note of... They say contact sales, but I don't know why you would contact sales. Like, right. Okay.
It's coming, I think.
Right. So.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you want to get in early. So. All right. I also found a neat resource, and this is one of those other rat holes that I was working on. Something, and I don't remember how I ended up here, but I did. And I thought this could be useful for when kids are creating things. This is the 36 dramatic situations. So this is broken down into 36 dramatic situations. So you could either share this with the kids. This is on Wikipedia, so I don't know where we're falling on Wikipedia these days. I know at first it was like, you can't use Wikipedia. It's horrible. And then eventually became, I use Wikipedia all the time. I just want to know something. And so I think it's become much more accepted as being dependable, but maybe not. Might still be blocked in many cases. So what you could do is you could take these 36 situations and provide them in a variety of ways. You could provide this in your Moodle course. as a glossary, for example, and give kids a different one each day. So that would cover 36 days, or you can make it a random glossary entry kind of thing. So, but it gives kids an idea of how to create some of that drama. Like, where does it fall in? You could also use it to help to kids reading something and have them identify which of the 36 situations it is. So, have you seen this before, Sean?
No. And okay. I'm stuck in Propello. I'm going to rat hole Propello. Okay. So you can create learning paths for your students in Propello. I think that's a really cool feature that they've added in here. Learning path thing could be really powerful if you could make it divergent and say, all right, we're all going to get to the same place eventually, but you're going to take the high road, you're going to take the low road, and we'll all make it to Clarny in the, which is not Scottish, but you know, you get the point. Yeah. In the morning. Yeah.
Yep.
Sorry.
No, it's okay.
It's your fault. I got distracted.
Yeah. It's always my fault. I'm familiar with that. Like I said, it does look very, very interesting, and there's the H5P activities built in, some of the H5P activities built in, and with Propello. Mm-hmm. It seems to be very well organized. They have the material there. There's the triple buttons, so you can click and add something to a learning path very easily. And they generally include a terminology list, a vocabulary list. And it's pretty graphical. They have images and things within it. It's kind of nicely formatted. Pretty neat, I think. They tend to be pretty short. They're not like overwhelming. So, yeah. This is one for vocabulary. I know you do just a little bit with vocabulary. And vocabulary is, especially with EL learners, is very important. But all kids in creating their background knowledge, then no words is a option for you. It's KNOWORD. And it is kind of interesting. They have both free and paid versions, not unusual. Right? With mm-hmm. the free version, you can get all of the public packs. So they have a bunch of public packs that you can use. You can select a time limit for package games. You can share assignments in Google Classrooms. You can export assignment submissions as an Excel spreadsheet or CSV. You are limited to 5 packs that you create, and you can have 2 assignments. If you want to remove those constraints and add in use image clues in your packs and view individual words viewed for assignment submissions, it's $5 a month. Or if you do the team one for 5 teachers, it is $200 a year. So $40 a year if you can find 4 other teachers who want to use this as well, I guess is one way to look at it. But it's interesting. They have a variety of packs. You can change. You can pick your level. They have packs based on wars and depression, ancient Greece vocabularies, words, Greek history, a whole bunch of things. You can, of course, do a lot of this within Moodle yourself, but if this is something that you want to do and you don't want to have to do the work, or you think it's prettier, then you can do that. Or if you just want to use it as kind of an add-on for some kids, as kind of an extra support material, you can do that as well. So, there is no words. Oh, let's see. We have something that's in development right now, and I think is really gonna be neat, is called the Saltwater Classroom. And I know, Sean, living in Michigan, you are not really familiar with saltwater. You are much more familiar with freshwater.
Yep.
Yep. But this is currently under development. I think it's worth watching. They have some materials now, but I think they're going to have a lot more as well. And it is all about ecology and taking care of the environment and taking care of the ocean. So it is based in Maine, but some of the material is... it would be available for anyone. So you can check that out, and you might want to support them as well. So they have a variety of materials that you can take a look, and it's going to be developed more as well. All right. Have you heard of sketchplanations? You've heard of explanations. Have you heard of sketchplanations?
Is this like what you used to do with sketchnoting?
Yeah, this is kind of related to that. Sketchnoting is specific for kids learning how to create sketchnotes, and sketchnoting has a whole process to it. And I still think sketchnoting is good for a lot of kids. But what this is kind of related, this is ancillary to that. This is creating explanations that are kind of sketched out, drawn out. And they have a whole bunch of them. They have temptation bundling, combining reward with effort. They have red volcano, gray volcano. So it explains the differences between a red volcano and a gray volcano. They have a Pyrrhic victory, which I think you might you may enjoy as well. They have Braille, how Braille works. And so you can share some of these, and these can also be great models for having kids explain something. When we talk about choice boards, this could be another pick on your choice board, because it takes, this means that kids have to synthesize information and then present it in a different way. And it's really neat because the way that you do this, the kids don't have to draw. They could draw. And it is, you know, kind of, it's along with creating a poster, but it's just a little bit of a twist on that. So I thought the resource itself is really good. That there's a bunch of things here that you might want to use that you could be able to use in your classroom. But also the whole process of the activity of creating a sketchplanation gives you just another tool to pop into your toolbox and see what's going on here. You know? But a lot of these are very, very neat as well. Openverse is just a great resource. I'm going to just touch on that. They have over 700 million creative works of stock photos, images, and audio. All is under Creative Commons license or in the public domain. So when you're looking for material, it's a great resource to have. You can search for things really, really useful for you and for the kids as the kids are creating things. And we played with ChatGPT, especially when it kind of first came out, and we created questions, right? We used it to create questions. You used it for geography questions, right?
Yep, the Geography Bee's coming up here at the end of the month.
Mm-hmm. Well, the people over at QuestionWell had kind of the same idea. Oh. So QuestionWell generates an endless supply of questions so teachers can focus on what matters. So just input some reading, and the AI will write essential questions, learning objectives, and aligned multiple choice questions. It's free right now. Again, I'm going to guess at some point that it's not going to be free, but hey, it's free. They have, they say you can export things into a variety of places as well. Canvas, Quizzes, Kahoot, BlueKit, GimKit, Moodle, Doc, or just print using the button in the top right corner. Wow. I think they have a lot of development yet to go, but it's a demo version, and you can certainly play with it and, you know, get out of it what you can while the getting's good. You may want to play some brain games.
Yeah, some brain games. Just before we get to the brain games, though, knowledge. Remember we talked about knowledge?
Yes, as an AI? I almost asked you about that. Yeah.
Yes, knowledge was just purchased by OpenAI.
Oh,
and
really?
I expect their pricing model will follow the same as OpenAI. So you'll purchase credits, and then the different features and functions you want to use will cost you X number of credits, 1, 2, 3, or 5, 10, whatever. So it looks like QuestionWell may be heading that same, as my guess. It's just a guess, but knowledge has been officially purchased by OpenAI, and that's now will be integrated with that.
Doggone it. If I'd have known it was going to be that fast of a turnaround, we could have set that up. Man.
Yeah. Oh, well.
We would have been rich.
would have been. Yeah, I know. It's just, what were we thinking? So, Ty, it's interesting you mentioned the QuestionWell part, right? Because I ran across, so I guess I should back up a little bit. We're playing this game at school where I find stuff and I'm like, I'll never teach that again. But, you know, so-and-so, that's what they teach right now. I'll give it to them. They can haul it over to the high school. So I send it down, right? And then I'm finding that teachers that borrowed stuff from me years ago are now returning it. I got a book that was written in 1996. Play Director's, Umlauter's Brain Games, right? And I open it up because it's got these different games that kids can play to get them to think. And one of them is describe how to rewind a VHS tape. And I laughed out loud. The kid's like, what are you laughing at? And I said, oh, VHS tape. There's some other things in there, too, that would just make you stop and go, ha. Huh. So I thought, I wonder what this company is doing. It was the Center for Creative Science or Studies or something like that. And I thought, well, I wonder what this publishing company's doing now, because have they updated anything? What have they done? And it turns out that they were purchased by the University of California, Riverside. And the University of California, Riverside then took a lot of their stuff, but then did some brain research with it, and they've come up with a number of different games, apps for your phone or iPad or Android device. And they've now got the Brain Game Center for Mental Fitness and Well-Being. They say on their site, we strive to improve your brain's fitness. We research, test, and disseminate evidence-based, scientifically optimized brain games, brain fitness games that assist you in real life with memory, vision, hearing, listening, and more. We have a track record of making our tested procedures publicly available so that our innovations help our community and the world. And the cool thing is that they've bunch of these things geared for students and students learning to listen and remember stuff, remember things in a sequence, remember things for process, all mm-hmm. skills that my kids need, right? And so I'm thinking mm-hmm. about getting this maybe out to parents and saying, you know, when you let your kids are messing around in games on the phone, maybe you want them to do, you know, here's an idea. And it hasn't cost me anything so far. I've downloaded a couple of the games. I've downloaded one called Recollect, and you have to use this little astronaut to jet around and find gems in a particular order, shape and color matter, and you have to collect so many in a certain order in order to score points. And then you progress through various different levels, and then different challenges and obstacles present themselves along the way to kind of make it a little more difficult, more obstacles to do the same procedure and process. So I'm playing with that a little bit right now, but this is kind of where it's gone from a book that was written by Brian Umleiter in 1996, turned into this. So I put a link to the website so you can look at it yourself, but I've also put a link for the apps. So you can scroll through, find the apps, and get yourself some free cognitive training. That's not slang. That's like a real thing.
Yeah.
But I do have some slang for you this week.
You do?
I have some slang for you to sling at work. How's that? Slinging the slang. Walk in and tell one of the girls that they're a passenger princess. Okay. Mm-hmm. You might get hurt, so don't actually do that. But a passenger princess is a term for a girl who prefers to sit shotgun and be driven rather than drive herself. The word is usually applied to girls who like to have their boyfriend drive them and who might not even know how to drive themselves. The term has been used both serious and satirical TikTok videos with some young women reveling in their royal status. Others with young men, parents, or pets enjoying the princess seat. So there you go, passenger princess. That's some of the slang that's being thrown around right now. And then there's a trend, and I noticed this trend in my classroom, so I thought I'd share it with you. This trend is making me thirsty, and what it is there are recipes on TikTok going viral to make flavored water, and apparently there are hundreds and hundreds of millions of girls who are doing these giant size water bottles. And I'm noticing this in my classroom, these giant size metal water bottles. And the girls are putting in huge chunks of ice. And then they're doing the flavored water thing, right? They have their own recipes for flavored water. And, you know, they swap recipes for flavored water. And then they clink and clank the stupid ice around in the metal, giant metal water bottle as they clang it to the front, grab a piece, chew, 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 and clank it as they put it back down. So it turns into like a Philip Glass percussion session between metal drink bottles and ice. I've had to pull one aside and go, ahem, we need to talk. Oh, no, I know, it's the water, it's the ice. I know, I got it. Oh, okay, all right. You got to fix that because it's hugely distracting. But there's a trend right now about making recipes for flavored water to put in your water bottle and bring to school.
Boy,
thought you'd see on TikTok.
I was gonna say, you know, I got to tell you, the youth these days, they're out there playing chess, they're drinking water. Where's the world going? These kids with their chests and their water. Well, and if you want time to make sure you can make your own water and play some chess, you might want to follow some tips from Larry Furlazzo on not taking your work home. This is just something that's kind of fun. He asked on social media the best strategies for minimizing the amount of work that they take home. And there's a bunch of quotes there, and I thought that was fun. So I was hoping he was going to share with us like how it is that he doesn't take much work home and instead produces 20 million pieces of writing every week, but no.
That's right.
Oh, but you can find links to all of that over on middleschoolmatters.com, along with a whole bunch of other stuff. And you can even search for things if you think, you know, I heard that on the show. You can quickly and easily search for it. You can find links to reach out to us. We would love it if you would go to your podcast catcher of your choice. Give us a 5-star rating. Tell us why Sean is the world's greatest co-show host. And with that, this has been Middle School Matters for middle school educators who care. All opinions expressed on this podcast are exclusively the opinions of the hosts and guests and not indicative of any employer.